Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
We are back. It's early call time. Andrew's here. JJ's
here. I'm right across the way.
Nadav isn't here.
No, Nadav isn't here, but we have a guest named Hawk Hamilton.
Hey-o.
I've worked with Hawk on a number of occasions, actually, working on scripted stuff. You might as well just tell everybody
who I am.
What are you?
What is I?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, our podcast primarily discusses jobs in the industry, and you know, there's a plethora of different jobs in the industry. There are, you know, directors, writers, editors. You primarily work in the post side.
I am on the back end. That's right.
Yeah, and
is that recording?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just... Okay.
It's recording, man.
Sorry, man. I didn't see numbers moving.
You want me to turn up the main?
No, it's good, bro. I'm good.
Okay. But you're like a third-party, entity to shows, but you're also... You have a lot of things going on with shows, with online, color,
right,
things like that.
Without us, they wouldn't ever get to air.
Right.
They still need a... More and more post-production is becoming finishing, as we were much more involved in the earlier days of post when there was film processing, which there still is, of course. But
right.
Now there, people are trying to internalize stuff. The future of post is becoming more of a finishing services, you know, final color, visual mm-hmm. effects, graphics, stuff like that. More and more people are taking the online and the dailies out of it and internalizing that. But you're still going to need a place like you keep me posted in Photochem to finish your show no matter what. So
right.
We'll always be around in some aspect.
Which is good.
Yeah.
I've always liked working with Keep Me Posted.
Well, thank you very much.
No problem.
We've liked working with you.
Where did you start off? Well, what's your title at Keep Me Posted?
I am Vice President Sales.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what does that entail?
I am the one of the guys that is in charge of bringing in new work and keeping, you know, the work that is there happy and letting, you know, keeping them at our facility. So
right.
I drive new business, basically. I try to bring in pilots, which hopefully turn into shows, and then maintain the series as they go.
Gotcha. And do you get that primarily through APs that you've worked with in the past?
Mostly, yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for 22 years.
Okay.
My story is this. So
okay. You beat me to it.
Yeah, thank you. but here's the story of me. So I came out to Hollywood when I was 18 for music. Yeah. I've always been a musician. I've always played. Why Hollywood? I don't know, because the music scene was horrible when I came out here. It was the end of the metal days. It was before Nirvana hit, so it was a bunch of guys that didn't know whether they should cut their hair or not, or wear leather, or should the makeup on, makeup off, I don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a bad time, and Hollywood was mostly a slum. But, so I came out here, played music for a long time, needed a job. The first one I got was at a place called, not the first one I got, the first one I got actually was at a bar called The Powerhouse, which just shut down. I faked my ID. And I was a bouncer at 18 years old in a biker bar called The Powerhouse on Highland in Hollywood. But after 4 years of that madness, I got a job at a place called Western Media, and I was actually delivering one-inch commercials, which television was for a while, one-inch mm-hmm. tape, reel-to-reel tape, to the local TV stations for Jenny Craig and Buena Vista Home Video, stuff
oh,
like
nice.
That.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And... a friend of mine, my guitar player, got a job at a place called Laser Pacific in the vault. And he called me up and said, there's a vault position opening up soon, and it mm-hmm. pays a whole whopping $7.40 an hour, which was 40 cents more than I was making.
Right.
So I had a mohawk down to the middle of my back. I went to this place, Laser Pacific, and I interviewed because I wanted 40 more cents an hour, and they actually hired me. And they hired me for something called a film vault, and I had no idea what that was. So they stuck me in the back of the building, and I put barcodes on cans of film and
mm-hmm.
scanned them in, and that was my job. And I was... actually good at it. So I, you know, I taught myself how to transfer audio. I taught myself how to clean film. I saw what was happening around me, and it automatically, I was interested. I never cared about how television was made or post. I never knew what post-production was. But as soon as I got in the bowels of this building with all these guys transferring film and doing, you know, dailies and syncing audio and visual effects and all that stuff, I got way into it. So after only 9 months in the vault, my the general manager asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, I don't know. I'm a musician. We have a sound services. We had a studio. You know, we were doing all the sound for the spelling shows, like 90210.
Oh, nice.
Melrose Place. And I was like, well, I'm a musician. I should go there. Yeah. And she said, no.
Okay.
All right. Well, where do you see me? And so she just stuck me in this room with about 12 other people. They were called account reps at that time. And they were the main contact between the APs of the shows and the facility, right? They facilitated everything that show needed from start to finish within the facility. And I was lost. I mean, I had no idea what was going on for the first 4 or 5 months. I was, you know, people yelling at me, screaming at me. I was completely stressed out. But as soon as I got it, I got way into that. So for 6 years, I did that. Then I was done. I got burnt. And what was the next step? And they said, how about sales? What?
Yeah.
Sales. What is that?
Yeah, you always think of like sale, like tie and telemarketing and that kind of thing.
And I'm not a sales guy, right? Yeah. I'm just a guy.
Yeah.
So I went into sales. And basically that's, you know, I was there for a few more years in sales, about 6 years after that. And then Keep Me Posted came after me a few times. And Laser Pacific got bought by a few different people. And it was, you know, the heyday was over. It was on its way down. And I went to Keep Me Posted and I've been there since.
That's great.
Cool. Yeah.
Man.
It's kind of crazy. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know anybody in the post-production industry, well, maybe 10 people out of the hundreds that I know that grew up saying to themselves, I want to be in post.
Right.
You know, it was, you know, I know a lot of people want to be directors. You know, everyone in film school is a director until they get into post. And then they're stuck in post for the rest of their life. That's, you know, a lot of the stories.
No, it's very true. Yeah. I have a few friends like that. I actually did want to be an editor since I started.
Good.
But I did, you know, go directing, and then I was like, oh, maybe I could write. Maybe I could do this. But I was like, no, post just, it feels right.
Right.
You know, it's like, you just know what you want to do. But maybe, maybe in a couple of years, maybe I'll say, hey, maybe I could direct something again. But
why not?
Who knows?
A friend of mine, Craig Yehata, who's the producer on Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy, yeah.
Yeah, he just directed his first episode.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I've known him since he was a post super. So, yeah.
I remember, in fact, I just started watching Sons of Anarchy like 3 days ago. And yeah, I know. I do this. I like wait for something to be huge. And I'm like, okay, I'll take, you know, an entire week and watch through all of it.
Right.
And I was watching an episode last night and I saw the Yehata name and I went, oh, because my math teacher in middle school was named Miss Yehata.
There you go.
It's stuck with me.
Full circle.
Full circle.
Somehow.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sons of Anarchy is the best soap opera. It's the biggest trick ever that they got guys to watch a soap opera because there's motorcycles in it.
Right.
Right.
It's a soap opera. That's all it is.
I think the episode, I haven't watched, I'm pretty much right where you are.
Right.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Like, he was saying, like, even after the third episode, like, what they did, like, with a man's genitalia, I was like, do I need to watch this show? No, it's a good show.
Television's becoming a completely different animal, you know,
right.
The past 5 years. You know, I was listening. I've been listening to you guys since you were in Hartford in the 80s.
Yeah.
I was listening to your pilot broadcast, and you were talking about Breaking Bad. And, you know, that I think that we did Breaking Bad, the pilot.
Was
done in my facility. We moved the senior vice president of sales out of his office, and that's where Vince, you know, that was the edit bay. We moved our billing department out of their office, and that was Kelly, the assistant editor. And then Gina Shearer was the associate producer on the pilot, and she was in our conference room. You know what I mean? And that's how that pilot was born. We were there, you know, for the whole run of this.
I know for a long time when you walked through right into your lobby, you had that big Breaking Bad poster right there. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I think that changed the way television and Sons of Anarchy shows like that. I mean, television's it's like watching featurettes every day.
Yeah,
Ray Donovan and Homeland, and it's so great. You could get stuck for hours.
Do you a lot of Netflix type shows too? I don't know if they're posted a little differently.
We've done. We just finished a pilot for Amazon. I'm about to do a show that I can't talk about, but they are posted differently. Netflix has changed. Sony and Netflix have changed the face of post production, and it's another good thing for post houses. 5 years ago, I said to myself, "What am I going to be doing in 5 years? You know, they might not need me anymore."
Yeah,
but now 4K comes along. So Sony, there's an edict from Japan. We make 4K TVs. You have a post house at your studio. You will do 4K television, so we can sell our TVs. And Netflix decided to go, I guess, for future-proofing, you know, the quote-unquote future-proofing. They wanted to go 4K as well. So there really started this whole new market. Amazon wants to be 4K because Netflix is 4K. And
right.
Now Yahoo wants to be 4K because Amazon is 4K. So
they're trying to make their own standard before it's a standard.
Right. And and all the other studios are like, why would I go 4K? But let's go 4K, you know. Right. So it's not really a new animal. The process is the same, but it's, you know, you can't do 4K in your Avid suite.
No.
In your offline bay. So here we are back in the need again. So
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, cuz it has to be 1920 by 1080. I think that's the biggest Avid will go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Avid says they're going to be able to do 2K and 4K, but not be for a while.
Yeah. But when you guys like, let's say a show shoots with the Alexa and they shoot with 4K. They shoot with 4K, but it's down converted to the 1920 image. I mean, we're getting kind of into techno jargon, but in the future, you know, they maybe won't have to turn it down to 1920.
Well, yeah, in the future, that's what has happened with post-production lately. Back in the day, you know, 10 years ago, and it's now back in the day all of a sudden. But you needed a DV cam cassette so you could go and work in standard def in your Avid, because you didn't have the ability to do HD yet, right? Now Avid can do HD full res, 1920 by 1080, you know, true HD in the Avid. But, you know, 4K, if you're shooting on, technical again, but if you're shooting on, let's say, the F55 camera, 1 hour of 4K on that camera is almost a terabyte. And if you think a drama shoots for 7 to 8 days per episode, and they shoot 4 reels a day, you know, you're talking about 20 terabytes for just one episode. And if you're talking about a 22 episode, well, I mean, really, you're not going to be doing that yourself.
Oh, no. Yeah,
so,
I mean, we deal with like the converted stuff. So we deal with the
NX. We have to down-res it for you guys. So, you know, it's a fast workflow on your end, but we keep all of the high-res dailies, no matter what you shoot online. So Keep Me Posted alone has over a petabyte of storage.
Gosh. I don't even know what a petabyte is. Like,
exactly. Scary.
It's 1,000 terabytes, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
That's okay.
And now, what
considering a thumb drive that only held 20 megabits 5 years ago was $40. Yeah,
I know. Right.
Oh, geez.
So I'm curious. Like, for somebody that just watches TV and they don't know anything about the process of television, like, what exactly do you guys do?
We do everything but write it and act in it, basically. So I'll take film to the side right now, but let's say you're shooting a digital camera like the Alexa or the Red Dragon or whatever. So you're capturing that image in camera, and audio is being recorded separately. Mm-hmm. So at some point, somebody's got to take that image and marry audio to it. So that's the first step of the process. What we'll do is we'll take both of those things from the set, we'll marry the audio to the picture, and we'll also, you know, most of the cameras nowadays, all of the cameras basically, record a flat image. There's no, people don't like to set color in camera, so it's baked in on set, right? So you have this flat, you know, washed out picture. But if you show that to the studio or the executives, they're going to be like, you know, what am I looking at?
What's wrong?
Fire this DP right now, you know, what are you guys doing? So somebody has to color correct that or apply color to it, which is either using a LUT or a CDL or a human being actually coloring it. So the very first step of the process from daily, it's called dailies, is we get the audio, the video, we sync them together. We transfer all of the footage while color correcting it. The circle takes, which are the ones that the director says, print that. You know, that's the good takes that he wants the executives to see. Those will go up online on an internet service so the executives, you know, can watch it in their offices or wherever they are. Mm-hmm. And then editorial, which is the offline process, will get a compressed version of those dailies, usually a DNX 36, which is an Avid MXF file that's highly compressed. So an hour of media for that's really only 15 gigs. When we're dealing with it, it's 700 gigs, right? So we'll give that to the offline guys. And then a fellow like JJ here, we'll cut that together.
I'm waving.
We'll cut that together. You know, it'll take a few weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, depending on the back end post and the director's cut and the producer's cut and the studio cut. So everyone will have all these different versions of this show, and that's what the offline process is.
Right.
But once that's complete, the offline editor will give us what is called a bin, an Avid bin, and we will take that, and from the original media that was shot on set, the high-res media, we will conform that exactly as the offline is, right? Gotcha. So using our online bay, it'll be 100% conformed. So every fade, dissolve, every edit, every blow up, every speed up, every transition, every garbage wipe is in there. We'll mm-hmm. recreate that in using the high res video, right? So that's the online process.
Got it.
And once that's done, it's basically, it goes into color correction. So a drama usually will take 16 to 24 hours of someone in a dark room just color correcting, because the same scene might be shot in three different days with three different suns and three different lighting. So you have to actually make something that's cut or shot at different times look like it's all happening real time in front of you. If you don't do that, television, you'd be watching TV. A lot of people wouldn't care, but I would be watching. A lot of people wouldn't even notice, but I would. Right. I'd be watching this saying, that looks terrible. But we have guys and gals that sit there for hours and hours and hours just making sure that each cut matches back and forth.
Right.
And then after that, there's visual effects. There's so much more visual effects than you would even imagine on the shows that we do. I mean, you think of visual effects, you think of Star Trek or something like that in spaceships, but there's street signs you have to paint out. There's an actor with acne. There's an actor who has bags under their eyes. There's all of that crazy stuff. We did a pilot that was based 50 years in the future, and there was a Starbucks cup. And it was after humanity, failed, right?
Yeah.
But somebody left the Starbucks cup in the upper right-hand corner, and they were on the mix stage in the final steps of the process. This was about to be delivered.
Oh, no.
And a PA on the mix stage says, "Is that a Starbucks cup?"
So PAs should speak up.
That's right. So they had to come in and
you could cost a show thousands of dollars.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. If you see something like that, don't hold your breath. So they had to come in and fix that. But that's the kind of stuff people don't think about. And then after that, there's audio. You have to mix a show for three, ish days, and there's sound effects and Foley, and then titles and all of that stuff, and then the deliverables now are even there's H.264s that have to be sent via the internet. There's ProRes, there's tape formats. It's madness. I mean, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and even for turning over to sound and music for us, people are like, we want an H.264 and we want a ProRes and we want a DNX36. I'm like, really? Like, can we just all just go to, a photo JPEG maybe?
Right.
I don't know. Just one format would be nice.
It's and the funny thing about that, people said it's just a file, it's just a file. How long does it take? Well, an H.264 of a 60-minute show takes, three times, the runtime to actually make. So it's nothing that just happens.
Especially if you want it to be the small file that they want.
Yeah, it's highly compressed and it still looks good, but it takes time for a computer to actually chug that along and create that image, that file. So
It's funny, you just kind of immediately went into visual effects and set extensions are also a big thing.
Yes.
I'm working on Scorpion right now, and we have I can't really go into the episode, but we have set extensions where it's just buildings and we're not there, but we fake it to make it look like it. It's kind of amazing
with the Let's just move on to, or if I may,
yeah,
let's move on to
feel free.
Quote unquote runaway production, right? So Louisiana, Atlanta, these places, they have a huge tax incentive if you go there.
Right.
But a lot of those shows are supposed to be taking place in Los Angeles, right? So you have to take out all of Atlanta that's there and replace it with LA if you.
Oh,
so there's a lot of that going on, a lot of visual effects. It's Louisiana for LA. So you have to take out everything that's Louisiana in the background and put LA in there so to make it believable.
It's interesting. I just did a pilot for ABC Family and it takes place in New York, and their whole all they do to give you, we're shooting in downtown Los Angeles for a lot of it, and they just throw up the Empire State Building somewhere in the background, and boom, it was a very small budget.
There's New York.
But it was,
now we're in New York.
We just had one prominent building, and, but even that, just looking at the breakdowns of, shot by shot, what it's going to cost to do all that stuff, and it was like 80 or 100 different, individual shots that had to have something done. It was effects heavy show, but it was like you look at the breakdown of everything and it's insane how much. And then you start, the producers are looking at it and they're going, okay, well then instead of doing burn-ins on the monitors, we're just going to use practical monitors and we'll just make it look good and that kind of thing.
Right.
It's a process that I think most people probably don't even think about when
even on, I do a bunch of shows for Disney and Nickelodeon, even like the little multicam kids shows.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of visual effects on that because they're moving so quick. It's like, why is there gaffer tape in the middle of the floor, you know, in the scene, you know, why is the background, there's a hole in the wall. Why did no one notice that there's a hole in our wall? You know, there would not be a hole in this wall in their house. So you've got to fix that. And that's, you know, there's a lot of money in those all visual
fixing
effects.
Mistakes.
Yeah. Fixing mistakes. And thank you for it. Production.
Yeah.
Thank you, production guys. Keep it going.
Well, I know that for like green screen work, people don't realize like a money value in some of those shots. Like, I think someone threw for like burn-ins, like on a TV, mm-hmm. you know, depending on the post house or the visual effects house you work in, that could be $500 to $1,000 depending on the shot.
Yeah. Just a shot.
Just one.
One.
And
we had, you know, ours took place in a lab where, you know, we need 27 different monitors and they all have different graphics, and it's like, and then we even have a guy that came in and he's, you know, what are you going to put on those TVs? It's not like you're going to put a feed of CNN news. Like, it's a science lab. So somebody has to create all the images that are going to be on there, and they have to be moving, and they have to be, you know, we got to be able to manipulate them on set. And it's like, there's just a ton of stuff that you don't even.
Someone's got to think of that, do it, and make it happen.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's you. You're the face of all of it.
That's right.
You're.
I am that face. But when you sit at home and you're watching these shows, you never think about any of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? You never think about that. You're just watching a show. But if you sit there and whenever I walk like a student tour through the facility, mm-hmm. I love to take them into the bay mm-hmm. to show them what they didn't know. You know,
right?
See this? Well, that's not that because we did this, and their eyes widen. You know, it's just like, wow.
It kind of blows your mind.
Yeah, you do all that. It's like, every day on almost every show.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Do you deal with? I know you mentioned it briefly, but do you deal with a lot of like vanity visual effects?
Yeah,
more than anything.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we had a show that was canceled last year where the lead actress was supposed to be in high school and she had bags under her eyes. So in the color bay, you know, and speaking of visual effects, a lot more visual effects are being done in the final color suite. So guys that used to just be worried about color are now actually tracking eyes and softening, you know, wrinkles and getting rid of those things. So, you know, people that want to be or get into the younger people that want to get into final color are now, there's a visual effect aspect to that job now as well, which makes it either more exciting or more daunting, depending on, you know.
Is that something where, like, you know, people, you know, you see like those videos on YouTube that are sped up of somebody, like a model comes in to sit for a shoot, and then you go through the whole Photoshop process of like, here's what she looked like at the beginning, and now the final thing. Is that like something that if somebody was doing something like that, could that then be a way to transfer into?
Absolutely.
I mean, I know it's different because it's a still image versus a moving image.
But not really,
image,
because what we do with those moving images is we make them still images. So we actually paint those things out frame by frame. So what you're doing is Photoshop, frame by frame by frame. But once you move it, you know, and play it again, it becomes video. But if you're, you know, into Photoshop or something like that, that is an excellent way to get into the visual effects world. I mean, we have a lot of graphic guys that, you know, most of the people in our facility started off in our vault in the you know, a place to get hired. Mm-hmm. Like there's, I think, three guys in our graphics department that started off in our vault. And I would hope that their goal, you know, right now they're doing main titles and end titles and graphics, and that is going to move them, you know, After Effects and Photoshop, and that hopefully will move them into Flame and, you know, the higher end effects devices. And
that seems like such a daunting task, though, to like, is there some kind of a template that like you can create, like, okay, we're going to paint out the bags under her eyes just for something simple. Is there a way to then, when you go to the next frame, you know, sort of like apply what you've done to the previous one and just adjust it slightly?
So every frame, the actor or actress is moving, right?
Right.
So once you get that initial fix on that one frame, now it's tracking. So you're just tracking the movement, you know, frame by frame by frame. So so it you know, takes care of the issue for all the movement in the scene.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we had an actress on another show that gained a lot of weight while they weren't filming, and we actually had to slim her waist.
Really?
Yeah, for every shot she was in, we took about 30 pounds off of her, you know. So we had to track her, and sometimes that gets difficult because, once again, in production, they're not thinking about that. So
the
camera's moving, she's moving, there's a pot in the way, there's a couch in the way, you have to frame by frame, like I said, track all of that movement. And
make so is that a very, I mean, it seems like it's a very artistic skill, not just a...
I don't think I could do it, yeah. I mean,
not just a computer skill, but no, really you've got
to... Yeah, you have to have an artist sensibility for sure, but right. you also have to have the ability to understand the software, which is quite yeah. complicated and, you know, not so easy to learn. And the tricks of the trade, too, you learn over time, but, you know, it's not just... painting a picture. You're not applying a broad stroke with a brush. You're doing that first, but then you have to know everything to do to make it actually happen and work. So
yeah.
it's kind of, you know, it's a cool job. It's a great thing to do on a daily basis. If you ask me. I don't think it's the great thing about post-production. One of the great things about it, if there is, there's not a lot of great things about post-production, but the great thing about it is you don't know what you're going to be doing when you get to work, you know, basically you have something that's scheduled, but when you get into that room, that's when, you know, it starts happening. Like, I don't know what I'm doing when I get to work until the phone rings. I know I have an idea of what's going to happen and what's going on. And I know these people are coming in today and yada, yada, yada. But as soon as that phone rings or as soon as that client walks in the bay, everything changes, you know, and your day has just begun. So it's, you know, it's not like going to Wall Street where you're doing a number job every day.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Well, when someone comes to you with a new show, what do you have to prep for? And because you know everything's different, every show's different.
Every show's different. That's right.
So, like, let's say, because we worked on a pilot that didn't get picked up, unfortunately. But I remember
was
coming
that
in.
Was your fault? I forget.
Probably. Okay. Yeah. Trash and burned.
Yeah. Sure.
Usually is.
Did terrible ADR. I couldn't sell it.
Yeah.
But we came into Keep Me Posted, and we, you know, we ran down, we're like, this is what we want for audio. This is, you know, we want DNX, we want X, Y, you know, anything that, and you guys were great in catering to our needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But is that normal?
Yeah, every show's different. So it starts off, you know, in pre-production, and who's the cinematographer? Mm-hmm. And once that DP gets picked, he or she will come in, I want to shoot this camera. And then somebody else will say, well, I want this camera. So then you start the testing process. And really, depending on the camera, and the way we work, it doesn't matter what camera you shoot, but that begins the process of discussing how post will go.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said earlier, if you're shooting the F55 camera, that's almost a terabyte per hour of media. But if you're shooting, you know, if it's 4K. But if you're shooting the RED camera, that's half that, right? So... That starts the process of, you know, storage and the post flow and all of those things. But like I described earlier, it's still the same workflow. You know, you still have to marry the sound and the picture and make it pretty and then give editorial a condensed version of it. Not a condensed version, but a compressed version of it.
Right.
So you can work with it in, you know, the proper manner without a lot of storage. Right. So the little stuff, you know, it's the overall process is basically the same, but every show does everything or simple things differently. So it's never like, okay, here's another show, go. You know,
right.
You know what to do,
right.
Go. It's not like that.
Yeah, it's like just bringing them into the constraints that we need to get. This is what you need.
Right.
You know, how do we get there?
And then there's people that at my facility haven't worked with us before sometimes. So they're, you know, I have a relationship with the producer, but they're a post super that hasn't worked at Keep Me Posted before. And they're used to doing things differently on a different box at a different place. So there's always that kind of, you know, we're not telling you how to do it, but here's how we're going to do it. And you may be confused at first, but you'll understand that our process, you know,
it's very smooth.
Yeah.
The only reason that you're here is because I've worked with Keep Me Posted, and I'm like, Hawk would be great for the show.
Well, shucks.
And yeah. So
networking.
Yes. That's yeah. And you know, being in sales, you have to go out and, do you go to like mixers and stuff to meet people?
Like, I really don't.
You seem like a mixer guy.
Yeah. No, I do things a little differently than most people, most salespeople. I mean, client lunches to me are nothing that I look forward to. You know, I like people, you know, and I know post, right? So I'm not really a sales guy in the sales guy term, you know what I mean? I'm not like,
you don't have like a plaid jacket.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on into this trailer.
Let's go eat sushi. Come on, let's give you a tour of the facility. You're gonna love it here. Check this out. It's a box with shiny things. Come on. I'm just not that guy. But there are mixers and stuff like that. There's you know, lunches that I go to, and there's the Hollywood Post Alliance and stuff like that. That, you know, I don't really do that. But sales guys, you know, they network and do that. And you know, I know. Basically, I've been doing this for over 22 years or something, so I pretty much know who I need to know. You know, sure, the guys that are running the studios now, like Warner Brothers and ABC and CBS and, you know, Fox, they were all post supers when I started off in the vault, you know.
Oh, right. Then your job's made.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've been friends with them since, you know, we were in the trenches together. So, you know, my relationships are already there, and Keep Me Posted has proven itself over and over again that we don't fail. And, you know, whenever people work with us, they want to come back. So my job's really pretty easy.
Yeah.
I sit around and stare at the wall a lot. And when the phone rings, I pick it up.
Yeah.
You're like, how could we color that wall and paint out that little nick in the corner?
Right.
So are you doing actual post work as well? Or is it, I mean...
Me personally?
Yeah. Like what?
No. 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 I don't know how to do that stuff. I know workflows. You know, if you tell me what camera you're thinking about shooting, I can tell you exactly how to start it and how it will go and how it will end. But I don't know the gear. I can't sit in a box and do anything with it.
Right,
right.
I can stand behind you and tell you what you're doing wrong. Yeah. But I can't.
Oh, you're like a woman.
Yes, I can't.
I can't do it, but I can tell you why you're not doing it right.
But I can't do it myself.
Do you go to the trade shows too, like NAB and like
that? I haven't been to NAB in 6 years.
Yeah, I've never been. I've always wanted to go.
Do you feel a need at this? It's
I never did.
You're one of the prominent places for this. Like,
well, NAB for the engineers, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because the new gear is shown there. So if you're a tech head and you're way into gear, and like my, you know, Brian Drown, my chief engineer, he's got to go there. And I walked the floor with him 1 year, and it was eye-opening, because as a sales guy, you're going there to party, right? You're going there. Yeah, I mean, you are. You're going there to take people to dinner. Everyone's at one small place at one small time in the same casino, and you're strip clubs, maybe.
Yeah,
I've heard people have been to those.
Yeah, I hear they're there.
But I walked the floor with my engineer, and it was you know, mind-blowing, because he explained to me why we're here, what we're doing, and how it affects everything in our facility, and why either we need or don't need this piece of gear that costs this much money. So that was kind of cool. But as a sales guy, I don't see the need to go to trade shows, really.
Yeah.
You know, I know everyone I basically need to know, and networking's good. You always have to be out there. It's important, extremely important, to get out there, because one day you're probably not going to have the job you have, right?
Right.
And I've known a lot of people that were at facilities for 12, 14 years and that same facility, and they were comfortable there, and they never went out and they didn't meet people. They had the shows that were there, usually, you know, the same people came back. But then when they lost that job or that facility closed, it took them 2 or 3 years to reintroduce themselves into the world of post-production. So people knew who they were, knew what they did, trusted them, and wanted to, you know, put them in a position where they could be hired. So networking is key. It's just nothing that I'm very good at.
I'm the same kind of way. I don't like going. I'll go to mixers to like bring friends.
Right.
You know, that are wanting to get into post. I'll be like, yeah, these are people and you can talk to them and they might have jobs for you. But like I'd rather be friends with someone first.
Right.
And then say, oh, well, coincidentally, I'm in post. Maybe we could find work together or something. Right. But
there's a lot of people like you, JJ. But there's also a lot of aggressive people out there that are at everything.
Yeah.
Like,
a guy that was one of my mentors, Leon Silverman. He was at Laser Pacific for a long time, and now he's at Disney. But he's, you know, he started the Hollywood Post Alliance, where you know, he would go and talk in front of all these people and get out there, and you know, because he's such a great orator. He's the best in front of a crowd that there is in this business, and probably will be in this business. He's at everything, and everyone knows Leon Silverman, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not him, but there's guys like him that are out there that they're driving force in this industry, and you can see it, and it flows out of them.
So, one question before we go to Nadav's questions that he Nadav sent us a few questions on the voicemail.
Yeah.
The voicemail.
Yeah, Nadav did it. Why can't you? I'm speaking to the audience in general.
You said you were in a band.
Yeah.
What did you play in said band?
Well, my first band, what would we call them? The Orphans.
It was
Blackout, and then it was The Orphans, I think. I played bass and sang.
Nice.
When I moved out to...
I play bass as well.
Yeah, and I... You know, my first college tour, I was 15 years old. Our drummer was 16, so he could drive. So, and my guitar player, his three brothers and sisters, they were all in different colleges. So we actually used to go up the East Coast playing at frat parties at the age of 15. But awesome. When I moved out to LA, I started another band called Nobody, and I just sang in that band. And then, you know, I was in a few other bands after that, playing bass and singing, stuff like that.
Do you still play?
No, I had a I had a kid, and you know, when and I fell out of
everything.
He's a terrible creature, and now I'm just horribly depressed. No, I stopped playing for a while, and then when I had my kid, I would rather spend time with him. And if you're starting a new band, you know, you have to. It's like 3 hours a day, 3 to 4 days a week, if you really are into it. And on top, when I don't not work. Like, I haven't checked my email since I've been here, and it's freaking me out. But, I, you know, on top of the work and then having a kid and then just getting married, yada, 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 you know, I just fell out of it. I could probably get into a band now, but I'm old and gross, so who cares?
I played in a band for 5 years here, and it's like, even we would practice 4 hours a night for two nights a week, but I was working at NBC at the time, and it's like, you go, and then you're exhausted, and then when you want, and I was a drummer, and so I had all the crap to lug around, and it's like... It's fun once you're on stage and you're like, I'm playing the troubadour. This is amazing. But like all the rest of it, I'm like.
Yeah. Being a drummer, that's the bummer.
That should be a bumper sticker.
I just created something. Yeah. But as the bass player, I always felt obligated to drive to my drummer's house to help him load his gear and then unload it.
Oh, how nice of you.
Yeah, that's very
nice. I'm such a schmuck. But bass is a little easier. But when that singer is where it's at, man.
Seriously, you don't show up. Them anything.
Yeah, you walk in, fuck you.
Might have a tambourine, perhaps. I don't know, depending on the band.
You'll never see me with a tambourine.
I was going to say, you don't seem like a tambourine guy.
Brock was definitely a tambourine.
More of a triangle?
Maybe.
Ding. like I said, we have some voicemails from Nadav. So
let's
play these.
Do it.
Hey, early call time. Long-time listener, first-time caller. My name is Nadav. I heard you guys were having a guest, Hawk Hamilton. And I just wanted to, maybe ask a couple questions. I really wish I could be there. But first question I have is, what is the most giant screw-up you've ever seen that you've had to personally fix? You don't have to name any names or what show you worked on in the process, but what is the biggest nightmare that you've had to fix?
Wow. Do I want that?
I don't know.
Out there?
I don't know.
I've seen a lot of funny stuff. That wasn't funny at the time. I remember when I was working in the film vault, and I didn't have to fix this, but I just love this story. I was working in the film vault, and... my door was open, and all of a sudden, I saw this 35mm roll of film basically rolling along the ground. It fell off of the rank while someone was transferring it, and I just saw it roll by.
Oh, no.
And then this telecine operator just walked behind it with his hands on his head, and he was in terror. You know, he's just like, you know, that's thousands. I mean, that's someone's shoot, right?
Right. And
film on the ground, no good. So there was that, another film story. So we did... I think
there's hair in the gate. There's hair.
Yeah, exactly. We did, I think, an entire series. And I think six of the episodes out of that series, it was a film shoot. Somebody noticed after they were all done, complete, dubs done and everything, that there was artifacting, a telecine error on every episode. So we had to actually go back and retransfer all of the footage. No.
So what is that exactly?
It was a digital error. It was digital noise that nobody could see in the environments that they were seeing. But when it went to QC, if you'd like turn down the blue channel, it was painfully obvious. And even though you really can't see it with your eye, if it was going to go to a foreign market, they would have rejected it, right? So if you can't sell to a foreign market, it's millions of dollars and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So the facility I was at, which I've only been to two, or at two, so I guess do the math.
Yeah.
It wasn't this one. I can assure you of that. They had to go back and retransfer all that footage and redo every visual effect and redo all of the color, redo the titles, redo the online, redo the dubs for, you know, basically they lost money doing that show.
So do they end up footing the bill for that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's all,
it was their problem. Yeah.
They created it. So they had to fix it. So they had to keep guys 24/7, but they also still had to make those delivery dates. So it had to be done. You know, usually you have 6-8 weeks to deliver 6 episodes. They had to do it in a week.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, shit. That's probably the biggest thing that I was a part of that I had to help fix and explain to the client why, which fell into, that was me. I had to do that.
Oh, fun for you.
That was great. I always get that job.
Yeah, well, it's like... it's like breaking up with a girlfriend.
Yeah, on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, oh God. I'm sorry.
My favorite part of my job is having to say I'm sorry over and over again.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Let's play number two.
All right.
Hey, guys. Hey, early call time. It's me, Nadav, again. I have another question. I was wondering, Hawk, if there is one thing that you could yell to production teams to do better, what would it be?
Well, in regards to help them, I would tell them to tell their director that there is a word called cut.
Yes.
To help me, don't change that. Keep shooting, please. There's a lot of shows that, you know, it's always... It's not in my budget. It's not in my budget. You know, our dailies are over budget. Well, we didn't, you know, think we were going to shoot 5 hours a day. Okay. And they asked me to lower my rates to help them.
Right.
And it's like, well, hold on. Why am I being punished because your director doesn't cut? You know, I'm still doing the same job.
Yeah.
You know, why? Right. You know, so that happens on almost every show. We're over budget. We need help.
Yeah.
Like, I have a show... this is a little off the topic of that question, but I have a show that's in its fourth year, and they called me up last week saying that we need to cut $3,000 per episode out of our post budget. And I need to help them. And it's like, well, shouldn't I be raising the rates after all the gear that I had to buy in the last 4 years and everything to keep up with the, you know, newer technologies and all that? Post-production is the only business that I know of where our rates get lower every year.
Yeah. I love UPMs. Yeah. They're my favorite people.
Well, I mean, I had a guy the other day. He said, I told him the overtime rate for one of my guys. He needed someone to work overtime. And he said, so what's the OT rate? And I said, the rate. And he goes, you're not paying him that much. And I was like, what? He goes, that you're making money off of that OT rate. There's no way you're paying this guy that much money for me to be paying that per hour for OT. And I was like, what? You know, are you kidding?
Yeah.
So there's that all the time. But yeah, production, no. Keep doing things wrong. So I have to fix it. Keep shooting too much. Keep trying cameras that you shouldn't. So I have to help you.
Oh, wrong frame rates too. Throw that in too.
Yeah, please shoot 60i for a 23.98 show so I have to run it through a box and charge you $500 more an hour.
Leave a crane in the shot. Who cares?
Yeah. I do that all the time. Starbucks coffee, fine.
Yeah.
In a period piece. Keep doing that. That's my advice. Help a brother out.
All right.
Teamster sleeping in the background.
here's number three from Nadav.
Early call time. It's your best friend, Nadav. I had some more questions for Hawk. I heard recently that... Kodak was going to stop making film stock, and so as a reaction to that, a lot of filmmakers are shooting on film this year, either television or films or movies or webisodes, web content. So I wanted to know what your opinion on that was, and if that changes your workflow at all. Thanks for answering all my questions, Hawk. I really appreciate it. Hope it's going well.
It's my pleasure. There is a lot of film nowadays. I don't know if that's necessarily because of Kodak, you know, threatening to stop making it as much. There is some pushback. They are creative types, like P.T. Anderson, who works with us, and he shoots film. I mean, in large 65 millimeter film.
Oh, wow.
Not even 35. Kodak has asked for Photochem's help on many occasions to help people shoot film. They've asked us to help them out, maybe lower our rates a little bit, and we're happy to do that because we're the last film lab there is out there. So,
oh really?
Yeah,
you have a Photochem.
If you're shooting film, you have to process it at Photochem. So,
So you guys work with Photochem, or
we are Photochem?
You are Photochem. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know
Photochem. Yeah, it's a family-run company. The owner, Bill Broderson, is the son of the founder, and he runs it. His kids are all in the company, and it's not even nepotism. One's, you know, one's a carpenter. You know, wow. The other one is going to take over the company eventually. But to answer that question, there is film out there, and we love it. And I will support it until the very end. I love film. The Middle, a half-hour show for ABC, is shot on 35 millimeter.
It's really? I didn't know that.
One of the last shows to actually shoot film. And I don't know if that's because of an actor's contract or whatever it is, but you know, God bless him. Keep shooting it.
Yeah,
I love film. There was so we're doing the Breaking Bad spinoff, Better Call Saul.
Nice.
And Vince Gilligan wanted to shoot film, but it was a Sony show, so Sony wanted him to shoot the Sony camera, and
right.
Yeah.
DP wanted to shoot the Red Dragon. So there was a whole thing there, but you know, it would have been. Breaking Bad was film, you know, to the very end, from start to finish. And AMC is a big supporter of film shows. So, yeah, I'll do... Photochem will do everything we can to keep film alive. You know, it's a beautiful format. There's nothing better than looking at film grain to me on a picture. You know, there's a lot of filmic cameras out there, like the Alexa.
Right.
Which still, you know, it only shoots RAW, which is not even 3K, but or HD. Doesn't do 4K yet, but that is a very filmic video camera to me. I love that. But there's nothing better than seeing 35 millimeter. You know, it is more expensive though. It does affect the budget. You have to process it. You have to transfer it. If you're shooting, you know, video, to sync it and color correct it and make files is usually a 2-to-1 process. But if you're transferring film, you still have to go take from take to take and set it up and transfer it. So it takes 3 or 3.5 hours just to do 1 hour of media. So the cost does build up, but 100 years from now, you can hold up that roll of film and say, "This is my show."
Yeah.
100 years from now, you won't see me around, but somebody can hold up an LTO-5 and say, "There's nothing that will play this." You know, this was a show on Warner Brothers in 2014, and I have no way to get this off of this thing.
Right.
You know,
you can't put light through it and project.
No.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had a director on a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if this is airing before or after that.
It's after.
After that. Rosemary Rodriguez, who's a house director on The Good Wife, and she's done a couple of films, and she was saying, you know, she did her first film feature on film, and then she just recently shot one on the Alexa, and she said, "I hate that my film is sitting on this little hard drive in my office. Like, it just, you know, it's not the same thing." I don't want to make it uncomfortable here, but I did shoot a 16 millimeter film in college at Montana State University. I sent it to Photochem for processing, and it came back blank. So, if I could get my money back, or I don't know who I...
There was probably nothing on it to process.
Who then. I taught? Well, I'm going to assume that I did everything right.
Was the lens on the camera while you were recording?
Yeah, the lens was there. I had the cap was on the lens and everything.
Yeah, the cap, exactly.
I don't understand what happened.
That was my... Was there a cap on that lens?
It was such a, like... The professor said at the beginning... It was a great film program because they put a camera in your hands, like, your first semester. So you can sort of just, you know, get that out of the way. Like, you know, shoot something, because that's why people go to film school.
Right.
And he said from the beginning, you know, when it comes back, if there's nothing on it, which is... In other words, this happens a lot when you're doing your first movie. You have to dig into the bin in the editing room and put together a minute of film from other people's table scraps, basically.
Wow, so you had to do that?
Which is what we had to do.
How did it come out?
I got a C.
There you go. Best grade I ever got in anything. Did better than me.
Let's play Nadav's last question.
Last question?
Yeah.
Early call time, bo ball time, bo fana, full fall time, me, my, mo mall time, early call time. Okay, I feel like an obsessive girlfriend calling 20 times in a row. I've listened to the voicemail so many times. But you know what? I got like 5 more questions. So, Hawk, I was wondering, if someone just graduated college with no experience and wants to be in post-production, what things and what steps do they need to take and do in order to work at your post facility? Thanks for answering all these questions, Hawk. Talk to you soon, maybe.
It's a good question. Basically the same process that I did. You know, I read a lot of resumes. I get a lot of resumes. And I see, you know, what school they went to or if they went to film school. And I gloss over that. Because as soon as you leave film school, you don't know anything about post-production.
Yeah.
You don't. I mean, a year ago, if somebody asked me what my 4K workflow was, I would have said, you know, oh, it's all set up. I would have lied. I would have said, it's all set up. We're ready to go. But, you know, it changes that fast, right?
Yeah.
So what you've learned in school is does not really help me in my facility. You're going to have to come in. You're going to have to look good. Hopefully you don't have neck tattoos. Sorry, I'm not a fan of neck tattoos. It's a bad
one. What about face tattoos?
Face tattoos I like.
Okay.
Depending.
Like, will that help, actually?
Yeah, yes. If my name is on your forehead, I will hire you. Keep that in mind. No, but if you look
that's
good...
H-A-W-K.
That's right. If you look good in an interview, and you look me in the eye, and you smile, and you're personable, mm-hmm. you know, there's only a few places you can start at any post facility. There's the vault, where I started, which mm-hmm. is, you know, doing vault things. You're getting tapes, you're putting barcodes on stuff, and hopefully you're not screwing that up. There's the front desk, so, you know, welcome to keep me posted. How may I help you? There's mm-hmm. that position. And that's basically it when it comes to working in post. In production, you want to be a PA. So you need to know somebody.
Right.
It's who you know. Hey, you know, these guys need somebody to get coffee and drive tapes around. You know, can you handle that? And a lot of the producers that work on television shows and feature films today started off as a PA.
Do you guys have mm-hmm. PAs, or is that something like that the show would supply to you, or is it...
No,
how does that work?
The PA is on the production side, so... Our PAs would be our front desk or the vault, basically.
Okay.
They're the guys that are running around making, you know, they're extremely important. If you have a bad vault, then you're screwed, because if you can't get a tape where it needs to be right away, your client's sitting there waiting, you all look like assholes, right?
Yeah.
So they're both extremely important positions. Like, even my front desk, if you get off my elevator and you see somebody smiling and they're like, hey, you know, welcome to Keep Me Posted, how may I help you? Then you're like, ah, you know, this is a nice place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If they don't look up, they're staring at the ground, they don't make eye contact, then they're no good to me. So, you know what I mean? That's that's the where we start at our facilities in post-production. But it really, it's who you know in production, basically. To get a gig, you need to get out there, meet people, and network like we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And once you get that first gig, now it's up to proving yourself. You know, you can't be lazy. The way I did it was I taught myself everything I could, and I proved that I was teaching myself these things. So in post, you want to start off in the vault. Then you want to go to the boss and you say, hey, boss, I'm really into, I think I can be a good digitizer, you know, or I see these guys doing these graphics. Did you know that I know Photoshop and After Effects? And, you know, here's some of my work, you know, can mm-hmm. I stay after hours? And, you know, can I learn some of this stuff on my own time? And
nice.
That's you know, when I see that, and I always tell people to do that when I, you know, if they're like, well, I don't know what to do, I'm bored. I'm how can you possibly be bored inside a post-production facility
there's
that is currently
so
doing 36 television shows? What is boring about that?
Right. There's so much that you can learn.
Yeah, just walk into a bay and talk to somebody for 30 seconds, and I guarantee you, you'll learn something. So if you're bored here, then you're not, you know, you should
not
trying. Be, yeah, you're not trying, or this isn't for you.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, or you're young and you just haven't figured out what's for you yet. You know what I mean? But that's the way into any door is who you know, getting that first gig and then proving yourself.
That's a good answer. It's a great answer. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a good one. We
broke it down to some of the basics that, like, you know, because we're always asking people, like, what should you do? And they'll talk about the things you should learn, or, you know, we always mention networking, but it's interesting you mentioned the firm handshake and the smile and looking
it's extremely
in the eye.
Important.
It's like, you know, the tiny little things that apply to any industry, really.
Anything.
If you're trying to get a job,
life.
It's like, yeah.
Life in general. I mean, if you're out eating somewhere and your waiter or waitress is just like nonchalant, not looking at you, treating you like, you know.
You're not going to tip them very well.
Yeah, it's like, wow.
On our If You Want to Be a Waitress podcast, we should.
Can I come back for that one?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, Hawk, thank you for coming out all the way to Tarzana.
Yes,
it's
a lovely place, this Tarzana. Yeah. It's a great place to visit, I've heard.
They have a Whole Foods?
It's really? Great. Is that?
Yeah, it's
excellent.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
There's Whole Food there.
And there is a Starbucks.
Oh, look at that.
Next door.
We can put that in a period piece if we have to. Well, guys, thank you for listening, and check out the website.
Yeah.
Check us out on Twitter and Facebook.
Subscribe to our show.
Yeah. Just tell your friends about us. That'd be sweet.
Network with your friends.
Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.